The only thing I'm going to ask you up front is try to listen to what they say and don't just go by looks. Okay. I'll introduce them and then I'll talk a little bit more about what the issues are. John Tollison, who's the Senior Vice President and Chief Technology Officer for PBS. And this is, let me go in order here, Gary Blevernicht, who's Chief Engineer with WKAR in East Lansing, Michigan. Who's next? Dennis. Dennis Harsiger, who's General Manager of KWSU Pullman, Washington, and of course, Bruce Jacobs, Chief Technologist, Twin Cities Public Television, St.
Wait,
Paul.
Wait. At least one more person coming. It's a tape-by-mail bicycle, man. Except they gave me a bicycle.
Don't hurt yourself.
I have a master tape from NET Ann Arbor. It was addressed to PBS. I think it was shipped about 1972. Library rate special delivery.
Good, and okay.
For those of us who go back that far, we'd like to at least remind all you youngins that tape-by-mail bicycle is still an alternative distribution.
Well, maybe, in that case, maybe there's nothing to talk about. Is the Canon reception ready? Thank you, Ralph. The first line that you see here says that the GE lease expires in 2006. Seems like far away. But it isn't far away because we actually have to make a decision by 2002. We have to inform GE of our intent to renew by 2004, but we have to know how we're going to pay for all this by 2002. So last I looked, it was 2001, so I think we have a lot of work to do in a short amount of time. A task force was established to consider the options in 2000, and a preliminary report to the Interconnection Committee has already been made, right, John?
Right.
And PBS has established a new position, which is they're currently searching, Director of Interconnection Planning, and they're setting up an office to deal with all this because it's a lot to deal with. I think one thing we're going to probably come out of the panel is it's not going to be as simple as it's been in the past. So with that, I'll start with John, who's going to talk about the status quo.
Thanks, Lou. Satellite distribution. It is my goal here in the next 5 minutes or so to convince you that what we do today is the absolute best thing that that we could do today as well as in the future. So I'm going to describe to you the reasons why we ought to maintain our satellite interconnection in the near future as well as further out in the years to come. Number one, it's an extremely efficient way to do what we do today, and that is go from several to many. Even more efficient to go from one to many, and that is the way the system is currently used today. The technology is transparent. You can use any analog or digital encoding, and it runs through satellite transponders just fine. It is currently the most used form of distribution throughout the whole television industry, which means that member stations can access other video and audio, not just from PBS and not just from the other program suppliers that use the PBS transponders. It's a mature and proven technology, therefore very high reliability. No backhoe issues here, as you might have with some other terrestrial kinds of systems. So therefore, I would submit that it is a perfect fit for the present distribution needs. As far as prices are concerned, there are multiple vendors, and anytime you have multiple vendors, of course, that helps drive down the price. So even from a cost point of view, it is effective. That's today. If we look at the future, I'm going to argue now that, as in most things, the future tends to look more like today than it does anything else. Is not to say that change doesn't occur, and that, as a matter of fact, we don't embrace and manage change. But if you look at most systems as they change in the future. It's usually not revolutionary, it's usually evolutionary. And so I'm submitting that over the period of time that we're talking about here, which could be the next 10, 15 years, that the future looks more or less like what it looks today. There is abundant transponder capacity, no reason to think that there won't be any less in the future. As a matter of fact, reason to think that there will be more. Existing assets are in place, both up in space as well as on the ground. That is, we have a lot of money invested in the Earth stations that we have around the country. Those are already in place, don't require additional capital funding. There are other uses for satellite interconnection beyond just station interconnection, and those uses generally will require continued satellite use. And I say that because those uses generally are from one to many. Again, where satellites really are the best form of distribution. So I would argue, in sum, that not only is the satellite system operating well today, but as we look forward in the future, that satellite distribution will be the way to go. Now, to my left, Gary Blivernick.
I've got a brief overview of ATM that we'll go through with the ATM machine. It's based on switches connected by circuits, and this is the kind of technology that's been around for a little while. We're going to go through these things just really briefly here. It was originally developed in the 1990s and was intended to be used for end-to-end communications all the way to the desktop. Well, gigabit Ethernet pretty much killed it off in that application. But where it really is excelling is in carrier networking, where the quality of service is absolutely essential. It's essentially a type of cell relay. It's based on a 53-byte packet, of which 48 bytes is payload. The circuits can be emulated so that what you can do is, the digital streams are various sizes. You can get them from 64 kilobytes to a DS3 at 44, and in fact, they're available at higher speeds than that. You can use these in private networks so that you have the bandwidth and you own the bandwidth. However, when you use a private network, it can be very expensive because you own that network from point to point. So what a lot of ATM vendors have gone to is virtual private networks, where you may own full-time a circuit to a local exchange carrier, but the areas in between are virtual circuits, so they're only available when you use them. But that also saves you a tremendous amount of money. Quality of service is where ATM really excels. And there are several different definitions for the quality of service that's available to you over an ATM network, including class 0, which just means best effort. Class 2 is for variable bit rates. Class 3 is for what's called a connection-oriented data transfer, in which delay is not a major factor. The ATM itself is a wide-ranging standard that can be used for a variety of different things, including video, computer data, and again, the important thing is quality of service. Some of the things that are really neat for it, for video transferring, is that it does have that small packet size of only 53 bytes, which means it uses small buffers, which can be switched very quickly. The 188-bit transport packets from MPEG easily fit into 5 ATM cells so that they can be rapidly transmitted. With the virtual private networks, you just buy the bandwidth that you need. Again, like satellites, there's multiple vendors for switches and circuits. So that's some of the neat things about ATM.
Well, I'm going to be the Mr. Packet Head here and try to make the case for a public broadcasting intranet that would be IP-based. This kind of an architecture would be inherently collaborative. It would allow stations to have formal long-term collaboration, such as the ADDIE project we're trying to put together in the Northwest. But it would also permit ad hoc collaborations. For example, if WETA and KCET were working together on a single production project, they could easily move files back and forth without having to order up ATM circuits make an efficient use of the resource. The resource is effectively used because you're able to pack events in there in a as-needed basis rather than trying to force everything into a single data rate. I'm trying to read my own notes over here. The costs for fiber are declining rapidly, and it's probably the only place out there that defies the adage they aren't making new spectrum anymore. People in at Bell Labs in New Jersey are busily making new spectrum every day in the fiber world. It's helpful because it serves both the broadcast and the broadband platforms. I'm a firm believer that broadband will be an important distribution platform for public broadcasting in the future. And this will provide a seamless interface with the commodity internet to get to consumers, to move video files around as we need them close to the edge of the internet as we're distributing them directly to consumers. We already have a prototype of this in place that we can experiment with for free before we need to make a buy decision for a replacement of the next interconnection system. It's called Internet 2. A number of stations have just completed a CPB Future Fund project successfully to work with that, and there's also video experimentation going on in the Internet 2 academic community. In fact, that platform is being access to that platform is being broadened, so I would anticipate that more than the current approximately 30 PBS stations that now have access to it will have access to it in the near future. I think this is a very good model for our future interconnection system.
Well, John, Gary, Dennis, I just want to state publicly that I hold you all in the highest esteem, and I just want to state publicly that I had nothing to do with that email that was sent out to the entire public television membership that said that your approach would result in Barney turning green. Nothing to do with that message, even though it's true. And to prove the superiority of my approach, which is perfect for every need public television has, the IP over satellite approach, I want everybody who has a server, a video server in your station, to raise your right hand. Okay? And then everyone who's ever lost, keep your hand raised. And then keep that hand raised. And if you've ever lost a recording, raise your left hand. All right? Now I'd keep your hands raised, and then demonstrate your support for my approach. Thank you. The scenario which I think is absolutely perfect for public television is that take the best of what these gentlemen have proposed and ignore the weaknesses and get rid of the weaknesses of what they propose and deliver video files to servers at stations over the satellite because that mass distribution is low cost, but do it with IP technology so that instead of having the need to program some automation system or have somebody sit by the record button, the record order tells what files should be transferred. And PBS schedule those files to be transferred, our servers accept them, and then any kind of problems in the transmission or broken cables or rain fades, we never have any of these problems, but if we did, they could be compensated for by error correction, much like the TCP/IP protocol, and the missing packets just sent and filled into the server. And this way we would need fewer feeds of the same program because we'd get them all ahead of time on our servers and be ready to play out. We wouldn't have problems with programs being lost in the air. We wouldn't have all those annoying needs for refeeds. And so I think there's just no question about it. This is the perfect approach. Thank you.
So you've all heard each other. And now you can kind of, you've had a little bit of chance to think about what each other has said, and you can rebut each other's comments, beginning with John.
Well, I'd be delighted. Maybe the future will be a little bit different than today. After listening to my esteemed colleagues, I'm willing to agree that perhaps we may be distributing some programs by file transfer in the future. I think that's a possibility. The next thing you see up there is virtual real time, and what I mean by that is a little bit of what Bruce just described, and that is there isn't any reason why we couldn't distribute some programs in almost real time, but yet, as a matter of fact, it really goes into a storage device at each member station and gets played out on time. So as far as the ultimate consumer is concerned, it is real time, but it's really virtual real time. No question that we're going to have combined master control systems with Dennis's project going on in the Northwest, and actually there are several others now that have begun to sprung up, and we have some stations in various parts of the country, Denver, of course, last year. But now, even going forward, there are several other groups that, that see the value in attempting to do this sort of thing. So I think that'll come to pass, certainly for some numbers of stations throughout the country. No question that the storage capacity will continue to increase and those costs will continue to decrease. We've certainly seen, and Dennis didn't even take the opportunity to point this out, but as a matter of fact, the terrestrial fiber costs have really just plummeted. When we started looking at this, Dennis, I guess it was about a year and a half ago, it looked like the costs were just going to be insurmountable. It looked like this just wasn't going to work. But as a matter of fact, today you can buy that fiber capacity so that an ADI type project actually does work from a business point of view, from an economic point of view. And certainly those costs will continue to decrease as more and more players come into that, the competition comes to play, and more fiber is in place. So I am willing to concede that perhaps we will be looking at some kind of a hybrid model in the future. I think the real challenge for us, though, in the future is going to be figuring out what of all of these technologies that we've talked about this afternoon, and perhaps others as well that we haven't talked about. So what are the choices? And then what might that mixture be? Because that really is what we're going to have to wrestle with, it seems to me, over the next year and a half, so that we can meet the end of 2002 deadline and figuring out what it is that we're really going to do to replace the present interconnection system that, as we said, expires in 2006. Gary.
Well, we've taken some of the looks at the good things about ATM, the quality of service, the small packet sizes, but yet the small packet sizes themselves can be a problem, because if you take that 188 package from MPEG and you divide that over five ATM packets, if one of them gets lost, since there's no error correction within ATM by itself, it's up to the decoder to put it back together. And sometimes that may exceed the ability of the decoder to put back together, and it ends up throwing the entire frame away, or you end up with a gap of audio. When you're taking internet protocol and you're running that over ATM, a lot of encoders for MPEG take their video stream and they spread it over the 1400 byte packet that internet can provide. And then you take your 1400 bytes and you split that out into 53 byte chunks. And if one of them gets lost, you could lose all 1400. The other thing with quality of service is that it will require what the book calls extensive algorithms to manage it correctly. And or it will require scheduled uses. So even ATM isn't perfect.
Sure. This must be a group of Scandinavians, because we're all supposed to be really good at pointing out the bad parts of our own ideas. That's maybe a characteristic that we all have.
Maybe a little bit German.
You're German. Maybe that's that way, too. Okay. It is... true that there are backhoe issues with fiber, but when that big backhoe in the sky takes out the satellite,
oh, never happened.
That doesn't happen.
You lose a whole lot more than that one leg that goes into your station. The other problem with satellite, it seems to me, is that it tends to lock you into a technology for about a decade. Now, we broadcasters like to be locked into technologies for about six decades, generally. But those times are changing, and it's going to be important as we move into the future to have a very flexible future. But it is true that there are significant issues with the infrastructure that I was recommending also. QoS technology is not here yet. There are good implementations on the way with IP version 6 and some new router technologies and other QoS technologies, one called Qbone, that are coming along, but they really aren't here yet. And depending on them for a packaged feed like PBS Kids or something, I think would be real risky. So the satellite option for packaged feeds seems to be still a very good one. It's expensive. The main remedy now for quality of service is to over-provision your network, but that's expensive, and this year's over-provisioning turns out to be next year's too little capacity. The other thing I think is interesting is whether or not public broadcasting can really adopt to a collaborative architecture, whether our sociology or our culture permits us to do that. Maybe a bigger challenge to that technology than the technology itself, and I think that's worth considering as we move into that.
Well, perhaps I even have a few doubts about my approach. I have to admit it's true. Illustrate that, so of those of you who raised your hand earlier about servers, how many of them have a server that has a tech or GVG label on it? Okay, let's get a show of those hands. Okay, you put that down. How many have a HP or a Pinnacle label on them? Okay. How many have a Leech or ASC label on them? And how many have some other label on them? Okay. The sad news is that even if these servers had easy ability to get files in and out, which many of them don't, none of those file formats are compatible. I can't take my C-Change file and send it to anybody and have them play it, and there's no other server manufacturer that can claim that. Now, the good news is, and you can see, I encourage you to visit an N something or other, the ProMPEG Forums exhibit where the MXF format is finally promising to fix this. If server manufacturers adopt MXF, and I think they will have some interoperability. That's one very important step, but that doesn't help our legacy servers. The other issue is that it appears to me that even some of the systems that have been put forth for IP over satellite, certainly designed for spot feeds, aren't really designed for program length contribution. That there's a much higher degree of robustness needed to handle these huge files. And the systems aren't really quite there yet. But we're designing a system for 2006. There's going to be a lot of changes by then. So I want to be cautiously optimistic that some of these IP approaches, and at least for some of our content, when I look at the time spent in just editing promos, just trying to find the silly thing, if these were files instead that could be transferred on into an editing environment, the advantages of that certainly to me justify trying to look for solutions at the same time recognizing that not all the products are there yet.
So now that you've confused us and we have to answer this by 2002, what do we do?
Ask the audience. Q&A from the floor.
Let me ask the first question. You've, to a large extent, what y'all have talked about is, in a sense, the physical layer. And I wonder about other issues which kind of Dennis has alluded to, which has more to do with things like are we going to continue to need a point-to-multipoint distribution system, or are we going to need point-to-multipoint and point-to-point, or some combination of the above? And how there are a lot of issues here besides the kind of physical layer that we have to resolve.
let me take a stab at that. We one of the challenges that I think is in front of us is the fact that this is not a simple linear kind of issue. If it were as simple as maybe it has sounded over the past 30 minutes or so, that is just simply looking at the alternatives, doing an analysis of it, choosing the best one or the best combination, and then make a decision going forward, that would be nice. But as a matter of fact, how we answer this question depends on and also drives other decisions that we are going to have to be making over the next few years. We mentioned digital asset management today several times. That is an issue, and depending on how you solve that one is going to have an impact on how we solve this one. Many of you know about a project that has been underway at PBS for some time, and that's DTV ATP. That's the Advanced Traffic and Programming work that's been going on. Clearly how that comes together, and I think that addresses a little bit, it's not just the hardware and it's not even just the software, it's also how information is exchanged. That would have an impact on this decision as well as this decision would have an impact on that. Clearly, combined master control systems also will have an impact on this because if in fact you do have combined systems throughout, it's almost like a regional concept, and does that then change how we actually distribute not only from and to PBS, but then among the member stations themselves? So this becomes very quickly a very complicated issue that really, and we have to be very careful as we go forward, that we make sure that we think about all of these different challenges that we're facing and make sure that the solutions we come up with are compatible with one another.
Anybody else want to tackle that one? Before we go to the questions from the group. Okay.
Hello, this is Tom, KSYS, Oregon. Tom Werner. I guess because I'm half Jewish and half German, the big compromise occurs to me. And that is that I think you should actually do both. And here's the reason why. I think that there are advantages clearly in all of these. There's one you guys didn't address, which is with the current system, the number of people who are able to contribute are very, very small. And I think in a more collaborative, egalitarian network, it would be good for any of the stations to be able to contribute to the network. And second, the long term, the very long term, is, I believe, heads much more towards the IP and some common protocol, some common data structure that ultimately I think that's the way the world will go. So it seems to me that the right answer to this may be to, at that point in 2006, you maybe reduce the amount of satellite capacity that you have and begin to start serious work with a probably terrestrial-based, some kind of network system. Thank you.
There's a question up front.
What size of optical carrier would you recommend for this proposed terrestrial interconnect? And given that, who's going to negotiate the price and with whom for the local loops?
I think it's a little early to talk about sizing, but we have done a little bit of work. I could give you some maybe rules of thumb based on what's out there now. The Internet, too, uses an OC48 for its backbone and is typically running at 10 to 15% of capacity over most of the major trunks right now. The sizing we've done in preliminary fashion in the Northwest looking at this is that if the stations are willing to take distribution at the native 19.4 DTB level and not require 45 megabits, say, for contribution feeds, you could conceivably do this with a DS3 from for the last legs that go into a station. Otherwise, you'd want to step that up to an OC3 level.
In the back.
Marty Vodovos, KLVX Las Vegas. I have a two-part question. Since presidential and congressional support isn't there for the digital conversions for all the stations now, and there are over 80 stations that are at risk of going dark for just converting to digital, How is the process here going to be decided and address the funding issue in the long term when support isn't available now for our critical mandated conversion?
Who wants to tackle that one?
I think John. I don't want to.
Senior Vice President.
A lot of looking up and down the table here on that one. The short answer is we don't know. Although I think there's reason to think that the federal government, in this case specifically the Congress, having invested the amount of money that it has in the past, specifically regarding interconnection. And remember, interconnection does have a special place. That there's reason to think that with the investment that's occurred over the past 30 years, that we couldn't make a strong case that would resonate that the federal government ought to fund the next step in interconnection. And I think that's a reasonable expectation. Now, the first part of that question, though, given the fact that the federal government hasn't seen fit to fund any of the digital conversion, that is certainly true. And as you heard this morning, the money that has been raised for digital conversion has been raised locally. And we know that there are many stations at risk for not making that. And I don't know what the answer to that one is yet. We do have reason to think that for those stations that are truly at risk of going off the air because they cannot generate the funds for digital conversion, that certainly there will be waivers requested and most likely granted. Beyond that, it's real hard to know exactly how that would take place. But again, getting back, it seems to us that, us meaning those of us at PBS, as well as I think on the panel here, that the expectation that there would be some level of funding to continue interconnection and to not throw away the investment the federal government has made in public television over the past 30 years is a reasonable expectation.
David Leroff from WGBH. Just adding on to John's response, there is at least the possibility that a reconfigured interconnection system combined with a very new approach to master control configurations around the system could save the system considerable money. Those of us who were involved in estimating the cost of the digital transition had a figure of $350 million for the cost of converting master controls in the system to digital. And that was a model which assumed that every master control would be replicated with a digital master control. And as we've seen on the commercial side, that's not the direction in which they are going. So let's not assume necessarily that this interconnection system interconnects independent master controls all over the system the way it does today. I know we're close to the end here. For those of us who are joint licensees, radio and television, you should be aware, or you may well be aware, that NPR is wrestling with exactly these same questions about its future interconnection system. And I'd like to take advantage of the fact that Dennis is on this panel because he serves on the NPR group, which is looking at these questions. And Dennis, if you could just do 2 minutes on NPR's Content Depot, which will be rolled out to NPR member stations as a proposal at the May Public Radio Conference, because that, I think, will enlighten the discussion on the television side as well.
In a conceptual sense, I think it's very similar to what we could have in public television in the future. In a physical sense, it might be a little more centralized than what we would want, and they're mainly dealing with the sizable amount of content that we have to move forward in a program sort of way. But basically, it's a system that would aggregate all kinds of programming as audio files in a given location from all sorts of producers. Those files would come tagged with promotion information, perhaps with HTML code for your website, I'm trying to think of several other, there's several different dimensions that would be added to that. Stations would then access that in a way that would provide flexibility in when they can can get it, not totally on demand the way it's being looked at the moment, but somewhat flexible in terms of being able to get emergency feeds. And stations then would add their own usage data and perhaps performance data relating to pledge and ratings that would go back then into the depot, become part of the database, and then be shared out with producers. So it's a fairly flexible kind of system that anticipates a lot of the things that we were looking at.
I think one thing we should always remember in this issue, when we're talking about interconnection as well as, especially when we're talking about combined master control systems, is that the strength of this system is localism. And that has been true of television since it began, but it is certainly true for public television. And that making sure that whatever decisions we make from a technology point of view, that we keep that in mind so that we don't find the technology driving perhaps unintended consequences in terms of other parts of public television, because we've got to maintain that the strength of the real strength of public television, that is localism.
Hi. We can talk about the scarcity of potential funding resources, but I'm more concerned about the number of earth-shaking changes that we have to deal with in our technology over the next 5 to 10 years. And my question would be, you know, do we actually have the system capacity to deal with a change of DTV transmission, a change in master control, a change in translators, a change with the ATP and the asset management, and then also a change in our interconnection? Would any of you like to address that?
Well, I'll take a stab at that. You know, from the station perspective, I certainly do not want to minimize all of those challenges, which are very real. And we absolutely cannot adopt something weighing its benefits without factoring those issues in. There have to be, in my mind, and I'm a big fan of the DTV-ATP project, because as I see it, the changes it necessitates are the burden of those changes is so much overwhelmed by the benefits of the increased availability of accurate and timely data that it's just a natural. But there are plenty of scenarios that we could come up with that would be such an extreme change for interconnection, let's say, that where the benefits would not outweigh the difficulties in adoption. We need to have bulletproof solutions that are well engineered and well designed and easy to understand and maintain to justify the change if big change is required. But the extent to which we certainly can't just say, well, we get too much change going on, we don't want to change anything, if there are huge benefits to be had, and that's what I think has to be evaluated.
Take that last question over here.
Eric Spiegel of WNET in New York. And I want to bring up a couple of points, you guys, whereas as you may know, that we have investigated doing a joint master control for the local PBS stations in the New York City area. And there's been a couple of issues. If you were going to do this today, I know we're looking at 2006, but right now, today, in order for me to get interconnectivity between our plant and one of the stations that was going to be part of this joint master control, it's almost that last mile trying to get from, you know, one local node back to the station is so expensive that we just, you know, we were all shaking our heads saying, how are we going to do this? The cost of that little 5 or 10 mile hop, or what is it? I think it's 10 miles from Garden City to get that high speed connection for a piece of fiber, they literally have to build the plant to that last mile. I mean, us being situated in New York City is a good thing because we have this fiber backbone that runs all the way clear to Los Angeles. We have a 45 megabit pipe that goes to KCET that works very well. I think it's OC45, but it's ATM embedded, and it's a virtual private connection, so it's continuous. But things just as they are, there's problems with that. Sometimes it doesn't work, sometimes it's there, sometimes it's not. So the reality of a fiber network is that you have problems like you would have rain fade problems with your satellite. And as what another point that came up is, as Bruce mentioned, what the file format. Everybody's going to have to either buy a new server or buy a new device, and if you wanted to store ATSC, you sure you want to take and make promos out of that and edit into it. It's MPEG, don't forget. Sometimes it's not so easy to edit where you want to. There are so many issues that are embedded in going into the expanding the infrastructure on a physical level where we're kind of like at the mercy of the telecoms and how they make their interconnections at this point. So us looking at a short interconnect is really very expensive for us, and that's today. I'm not saying that it's going to be that way in 6 years, but I suspect that to get a wide bandwidth pipe is still going to be up there in terms of cost. ATM is really a nice format, but to be able to support it and to keep it going seems to be an ongoing battle. And how about real time? If you're not using ATM, if you wanted to do, you wanted to use internet too, and as you're saying, it's almost real time, but there are so many real time events that occur, how would you overcome those problems? And even when we look at satellite now, satellite tends to be, the best we can do is stuff FEC into it. Maybe there should be some kind of rethinking where that, say that the VSATs, which are now sleeping, that we could utilize that as a way of acting or knacking the feed that you're sending. And utilizing the infrastructure that's already there to try and make the transition from what we currently do to a newer form of technology as time goes on and the cost of fiber and the other type of terrestrial infrastructure comes down.
And with your master control sharing idea, it may be that it doesn't make sense in every market in every area due to interconnection costs when you look at it. I mean, in Michigan, for example, we run our station with one or two people. Sometimes they're a student from the university, and it's done at very low cost. And to have an interconnection into another area to share a master control would be cost prohibitive for us. So there's trade-offs that have to be balanced everywhere. And with the quality of a file transfer system, you can do a store and forward kind of a thing where your transmission rate is independent of the quality rate. So you could have a promo and make it available to you. That promo might be distributed at a level of 333 megabits per second. So that's a full high definition with the very modest compression. And you could get that over a T1 line, but you'd have to wait a while for it. Or over a 45 megabit line, and it might take you 10 minutes to get that whole promo in, where you could then edit it together. Dennis, do you have anything to add?
I would just observe in terms of the that there is a huge disconnect right now between intercity terrestrial costs and last mile terrestrial costs. The intercity world is very competitive and very inexpensive, and to get from that pop to your building, they've really got you by the throat. So we are routinely in our project seeing quotes now where we go 500-600 miles. In fact, I think Andy Butler told me that Andy, that you had a quote, a coast-to-coast quote, where the last mile costs were more than the inner city cost. And we're routinely seeing that in ours. So that right now is not a competitive world.
I just want to say that Bruce and I have had a lot of discussions about file interoperability, and I think that's one thing that everybody in this room can make a difference when you go talk to these server
Thank you.
Beat on them and say, we need to do this, because everything that everybody's talked about here is data. You know, it's all digital now, it's all data. If we can move these files back and forth and easily ingest them into your server rather than recording them in like video, it's going to make life a lot easier.
Yes, for all of these approaches, if you're buying a server soon, put it in the RFP, put it in the purchase order, must support MXF level 1. And level 1 means it'll support any of the GOP structures. And they don't have to deliver it to you supporting MXF because the standard isn't done yet, but they've got a promise to modify it to do that. Then we start building interoperability.
We'll take one more because we haven't gotten the high sign from Ralph yet. I don't know, maybe he hurt himself on the bike. Thank you.
Thank you. Dennis Baer with Wisconsin Public Broadcasting in Madison. We don't have 2006 ahead of us. We have 6 months ahead of us when our state contract, our state interconnect is up. So maybe in summary you could give me some advice here. We right now have a service that feeds 26 transmitters and a head end. So what should I look for?
I just got the word that we have a little extra time, so...
Oh, darn.
I thought we were going to escape this one.
I wouldn't sign any long-term contracts.
I think the crowd would benefit from Gary's description of some of the interesting things you've discovered trying to feed video through routers that you thought would pass it.
Well, we've been doing some experiments. We're a member in Internet, too. And we've been doing some experiments in association with our computer lab to try different MPEG encoders and decoders. And we've spent a lot of time with one box that's a prototype for a manufacturer. And we found that it takes the MPEG packets and it puts them into sizes of about 10,000 bytes in a row. As I may have mentioned earlier, there's about 1,400 in each internet package. So it takes the 10,000 bytes and spreads it over several internet packages, internet packets. And what's happened is that we have a very good infrastructure on campus, and we were finding that as we sent these bytes to each other, that the decoder just wasn't getting them and was choking on it. And it turned out that the gigabit router is too good, that what it was doing is you're taking your packets and you're splitting them up. So you've got a first packet that says, hi, I've got this much payload and watch for three more that are gonna follow me. So it would get that one and go, oh, this one goes to that port and just immediately send it over. Then the additional packets would come along and they'd say, I'm with Fred. And it would go, Fred, who's Fred? Oh, that's right. I'll send you up to the CPU and deal with you for a while. Oh, you go over there. But by that time, it already sent the succeeding three headers over there. So you had three headers with nine tailing packets that all showed up at the same time. The decoder would go, nope, sorry, not going to play it. And just major problems with it. So this is just some of the things that we've been experimenting with and trying to battle.
That was a gigabit router, right?
Gigabit router. Not the router's fault, not the decoder's fault, but it just doesn't work together. Way back in the back.
And we'll take this one, then we'll go to the back.
Tim Stoffel, KNPB, Reno, Nevada. How about a hybrid approach? You know, we've talked about satellite, the traditional way we use it. We've talked about IP over satellite. There's no reason today that we can't do something like IP.